Good morning. Let's go ahead and begin. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The date is March 19, 2008. The time is 8:32 a.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board this morning consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, representing Secretary of State Mike Kaufman. To my right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my left is Sharon Eubanks, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. Ms. Eubanks will be sitting as the Director's designee for the four agenda items we have this morning, and then for our afternoon meeting, I believe Dan Carton will be the Director's designee to the Title Board. This morning we have four measures, numbers 68, 69, 70, and 71 concerning severance taxes, which I would like to take as a group, although we'll take separate votes on them. There are sign-up sheets on the table by the door in the back, so anyone who wishes to testify, please do sign up. I should mention also just the usual procedures of the Title Board for new measures is that the first step for each measure is to make sure that the Title Board understands the measure. So there may be questions from the Title Board members for the proponents. The second step would be that for each measure, the Title Board would determine whether it has jurisdiction to set a title. And that necessarily includes the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. And then third, if the board determines that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will start with a staff-prepared draft, copies of which are on the table by the door. And again, I would like to start with 68, 69, 70, and 71 as a group. Initially we had distributed copies with the incorrect numbers on them, and then we reposted the measures with the correct numbers, and also by email re-notified people that had received notice from the Secretary of State's office. So I hope there's no confusion about the numbering. The other general announcement that I would like to make is that I did ask the Office of State Planning and Budgeting to provide the Title Board with a fiscal estimate for purposes of complying with the requirements of TABOR about the form of the title for measures that have a tax increase. I do not yet have the written fiscal estimates from the Office of State Planning and Budgeting, but I'm expecting them momentarily, I think. So they'll be delivered to us here and distributed. Copies will be put on the table, and they'll be distributed to the Title Board members. With that, and I also should have mentioned to my far right is Ceci Gomez from the Secretary of State's office. So with that, let's perhaps first hear from the proponents and see if there's any introductory remarks or if there's questions from the Title Board. Good morning.
Good morning. Cara Veach for the proponents. You said that you wanted to take all four at the same time. Our office inadvertently made a change to 70 that was not discussed at review and comment.
Okay. So number 70 is withdrawn at the request of the proponents. Thank you. Maybe it's self-explanatory. We've had an opportunity to look at the differences among the measures. If there's nothing that you need to tell us about it, maybe I'll just see if there's questions from the title board members. Okay. Are there questions from title board members? Ms. Eubanks?
I have one question. I just have to figure out which one it was on. I think it was on 69, and I just want to clarify my understanding. It appears to me that this measure eliminates the existing credit against oil and gas severance tax for ad valorem taxes paid. But then the what I would normally call as debrucing provision, that's applicable to all the revenue resulting from the oil and gas severance tax. Is that a correct understanding?
On 69, we had anticipated that the debrucing under 105.3 would apply to the new tax revenue created by the.
But the language of the debrucing provision references the tax, the proceeds of the tax received pursuant to paragraph B of subsection 1, and that's all the tax,
all
isn't it?
Yes. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I have
Mr. Domenico.
I've expressed, I think, in the past when we've had similar measures in front of us, some concern in light of, well, this I think has come up since we last had one of these, but in light of the Supreme Court's decisions in, say, 55 and I think 17, the more recent one about, I think 17 is the right number, about whether there were two subjects when we kind of saw a measure that both created a new environmental trust regime, a public trust doctrine, and a new entity to enforce a number of laws. And the problem I've had, I think, is a little bit related to the problem the Supreme Court had in those cases, where in these measures all basically, it seems to me, are about raising more money through the severance tax and then doing something with that money. The issue I have is when you also create a new fund or a new entity or something like that, and I mean, as usual with single subject, I've sort of on both sides of the issue, but could you explain to me why I shouldn't be concerned that at least in the two of these, I think, 68 and now 71, where you create, in addition to sort of raising more money in certain ways and then splitting it up, you also create a new land conservation fund, why I shouldn't be concerned that that is a single subject violation?
And that's also in 69, just so we're all on the same page.
Okay.
Right. We know last year there was a severance tax for K through 12 purposes, and that was challenged on single subject at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's affirmed the title board's decision to set a title on that matter, and there they created a new revenue stream and allocated or distributed that stream. And similarly, that's what we're doing here. We're just setting up a mechanism to distribute that stream by creating the fund.
Okay. I understand that. The issue, though, is if you're both creating a new revenue stream or increasing an existing revenue stream is probably more accurate, and divvying it up, but aren't you also kind of creating new guidance, this new entity at least, that it has a new mandate of what to do with certain funds? And that's really sort of my concern. And I, as I say, I don't know that we have wholly consistent guidance, because I agree with you, there's certainly precedent. But why should this be seen more like that and less like something where there's sort of a substantive part of this that's not really necessarily related? I mean, I know it's obviously it's related because it'll be funded with this money, but is that simply enough to create a single subject, or does it have to be something tighter than that?
Well, I think that this one is obviously we're creating one fund related to the purpose that we are establishing in 101. Let's take 68. So in 68, we're adding language to 3929101, and the creation of the fund relates to that. I think there is a single subject in 68, 69, and 71 based on that. And again, it's merely a mechanism to distribute the funds, which we know we're allowed to do under previous precedent from the Supreme Court.
So maybe it's this. There's nothing in here. Well, I mean, I guess there is something in here that sort of substantively guides this new entity, right, that creates a new standard for how to spend these funds. In addition to creating the new entity, there's kind of substantive guidance. Does that cause you any difficulty? I mean,
and in this issue it doesn't, because what we're doing is modifying the tax and saying what the purpose of that modification is, distributing that tax, and then creating an entity consistent with the purpose of the change to handle some of that.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? If not, then let's move to the question of whether the measures do comply with single subject. And I do have several people signed up to testify. Don't know whether they all want to testify on the question of single subject, but let me find out. Heidi Shore. Answers no. Elise Jones? Answers no. Doug Robert?
Rebotham?
No. Scott Gessler?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Gessler, let's hear from you and find out what you have to say on single subject.
Thank you very much. My name is Scott Gessler, and I represent the Colorado Petroleum Association. And looking at the sign-in sheet, I had a sense I'd be the only one perhaps opposing this ballot on the single subject matter. And I would like to focus on the Land Conservation Trust, because that's the one that we had essentially flagged as problematic with respect to a single subject. I'd like to sort of start with perhaps something that most people would agree, that violates the single subject. Let's say that we set up a program for energy conservation, and renewable energy. And then the same initiative set up an extensive program for funding preservation of wildlife habitat. One was energy conservation, for example, you know, turning out efficient lights, to save energy, or perhaps traffic issues to reduce the fossil fuel use. So there was a program for that spent money to do that. And there was another program that helped maintain, let's say, riparian habitats, wildlife habitats, and prevented development. We had those two specific programs. I think most people would recognize that they were two separate subjects. That's what this does here. But what this essentially does to get around that is they bolt on a tax increase. So they add a tax increase. And by adding the tax increase, they're saying, well, now that we've added the tax increase, we can direct how the money is spent in every way, in any way. So even if the money is spent on two substantially different programs, with two substantially different regulatory schemes that will be created, and two unconnected approaches, nonetheless, it meets single subject. That's essentially what this is being asked, what the board's being asked to do. I think this differs fundamentally from the issues last year with respect to education. In that instance, it was pretty much focused, the revenue streams were pretty much focused on education, changing it in that one way. Here, the revenue streams are directed to several, and I would argue, fundamentally different items, And that violates the single subject. If the tax increase weren't here, if it were simply these two programs from this land conservation put into the Land Conservation Trust, these two programs, I would argue, would be considered separate subjects, separate matters that are not related to one another and are not connected to one another. And essentially what the principle that seems to be developed is that you can take two disparate areas, two new programs, and create these new programs through the initiative process. And even if they're disconnected, and even if they have no relationship to one another, as long as you bolt a tax onto the two of them, they all of a sudden become connected because they're both distributing tax revenues. I'd argue that that's a violation of single subject in my hypothetical, and it's a violation of single subject here as well. Simply bolting on a tax increase, waving that wand, does not solve these single subject problems. The reason why it's a single subject, this panel has more collective experience than I discussing single subject matters. Probably individually each person has more experience. But I would say, the goal of the single subject is to avoid hidden programs hidden within the folds of an overall matter, so that people aren't focused on one thing and they realize they're actually getting something that's much separate that they didn't fully understand. Here what they're getting is a pretty extensive, several extensive programs in very disparate matters, when coming under the guise of a tax increase. This is exactly the type of issue that's hidden in the folds of a matter that violates that single subject. And it also, I would argue, goes to the issue of what in the legislative context is called log rolling. You put together two different types of matters in the hopes that the vote for one will help the vote for the other. So some people here may very much be interested in the energy issues, taxing energy on one hand to use that for energy conservation, and that's fair enough. But those same people may not be may be fundamentally opposed to taxing energy for energy conservation and creating a whole new program for water resource conservation. So they're different, and the policy considerations behind each one of them is much different as well. So I'd argue that this is a violation of single subject, all of these, because of this land conservation trust, the way it's treated, and the fact that it covers disparate matters, fundamentally different matters. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Gessler? Would you check and see if your microphone is on? Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry if I'll bend over.
I just wasn't hearing, but no, that's good. Thank you. Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. Gessler, I was wondering if you could, in terms of your single subject argument, whether you could distinguish what the court upheld in number 14 in the current cycle, which again was dealing with severance tax being used for multiple purposes, and those purposes being school district capital construction, counties and municipalities impacted by oil and gas development, processing, transportation, or conversion, public elementary and secondary education, state capital construction, and such other purposes as determined by the General Assembly. I mean, that seems like a wide range of purposes which the court has upheld on single subject grounds, and so I'd just like to hear how you distinguish 14 from these measures before us today.
I think in that instance it did two things. One is obviously it granted discretion to the General Assembly. And I'd argue that in this way it was almost guidance to that. But the other end, and I believe the arguments before the panel at that time were that this was specifically designed to mitigate local impacts. So those fell, I think, properly under the rubric of sort of the local municipal impacts or locality impacts, because and those particular issues, as I remember them, and I apologize if my memory is faulty, but as I remember them, the discussion was that the severance tax funds should go back to the counties, or in some instances municipalities, the geographical areas which cause an impact. For example, the transportation impacts, the impacts on schools with additional workers and things like that. So that was the single subject, I believe, that the title board accepted and the court did. I would argue that this is different, that energy conservation issues, for example, energy usage, perhaps on the Front Range, is much different than preservation of water resources that could be on the western slope. So you don't have that locality nexus.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Gessler?
Yeah, I think I have a couple. Point me to these two separate subjects that you say are sort of would be separate subjects even without the tax increase.
I think if you look at 3929-101, the addition to that at the very beginning, renewable energy, energy sources and energy conservation. I think that fits within a single subject. But I would argue that the promote the acquisition and preservation of land and water resources to protect wildlife habit and for other public purposes. The acquisition and preservation of land and water resources and protection of, for the purpose, I interpret that as for the purpose of protecting wildlife habitat is much different than promoting renewable energy resources. I think those would be the two separate subjects.
Well, obviously, as my questions with Ms. Veach showed, share some of your concerns and agree that there seems to be some hints in some cases that suggest whether you've got kind of a substantive change in the direction we're going with a program or a revenue stream, and then you make sort of a sudden change and add this new, in that case, the public trust doctrine, that there's something about these that hints towards that. But on the other hand, we have a much more direct precedent in number 14. And, I mean, wouldn't the argument of the proponents be that even accepting your explanation of 14, the reasoning behind 14, that this basically does the same thing. It doesn't tie it to the local specific geographic areas that are impacted by oil and gas development necessarily, but it ties it kind of more broadly to the sorts of environmental concerns that oil and gas development can raise. And why is that really any different than tying it to the local communities instead of the geographic area? You're tying it to kind of the environmental impact, and so by encouraging renewable energy or land preservation for wildlife habitat, you're trying to mitigate or reverse to some extent the what the proponents see at least as the negative effects of the oil and gas development in a similar way that the number 14 was trying to mitigate the negative effects on local communities.
Well, I think I would argue probably two things. First of all, factually, I'd argue that that's not necessarily correct. For example, you know, a lot of alternative or renewable energy resources are directly at odds with, for example, saving water corridors, concentrated solar energy, for example, is a heavy user of water resources. So although perhaps in the public perception arguments like that can be made, factually they don't necessarily hold up.
Well, but that's all, I mean, that's not really our business, is it? I mean, that would, you could also say that local energy development really actually helps local communities, and so in number 14 it factually didn't hold up that the local communities really need a boost from a statutory change. I mean,
well, I would perhaps take a little bit of issue with that it is important for the title board to, you know, look at the actual impact of these to determine whether there's a second subject. And I understand that, you know, people may disagree with my characterization, but I still argue that it makes sense for the title board to look at that factually, how these things actually play out, to make that determination. But I think the second argument I'd make is that there seems to be very little, if any, limiting factor on this particular approach to the single subject. In fact, I would argue that it's almost impossible to not have a single subject by defining it broadly enough. And in fact, I think the Colorado Supreme Court has warned against that as well, that you actually have to look at the logical relationships provisions. So I would argue that you have to, you know, actually have a factual predicate to be able to look at those logical relationships and then look at them, in fact, in a probing manner. That and that this has such a broad and disparate swath of activities that it governs that it's...
Well, if that's true, then, I mean, isn't what's basically currently in Section 108 and that divides things up in all sorts of different ways and that is being adjusted a little bit here as well, isn't that even a much bigger problem than adding this 108.7 and the legislative declaration? I mean, those are really much more disparate than, you know, I mean, if you've got local government and you've got land conservation and clean energy, and in 14, you know, you had it split up among schools and local governments. I mean, this to me seems like just a sort of variation on the idea that apparently has been accepted, which is that when you're adjusting a tax that in a lot of ways you can do almost anything with that tax, especially if there's some reasonable argument that the what you're doing with it is in these cases an attempt to in some way mitigate the damage caused by or some of the negative effects, I'll say, of the activity that's being taxed. And I mean, I can accept your factual arguments, but I don't think we can say it's totally unrelated, even if you and I would agree that maybe there's some contradictory efforts in there. And so it just seems hard for me to figure out a way that we can say that, well, it's not a single subject violation to raise this tax and give it to schools and then all these different resources, but if you're going to also give it to, say, renewable energy, you can't then give it also to some land conservation. I just have trouble figuring out why that is a problem when...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'd argue that there's a difference between simply saying, well, we're going to allocate it to these various funds that have received the tax in the past. There's a difference between that and creating this new land conservation trust that has relatively specific guidance in how these taxes shall be used, and that's and it's creating a new program that has, that will have regulations, that will have an entire scheme for very different, I don't mean scheme in a pejorative way, but will have a different manner of spending this money that essentially creates a program in a regulatory manner with very disparate subjects within that and disparate from the other areas. I mean, it's the creation of this program here that we've got in this land conservation trust. It's not merely a distribution of the tax. So, you know, if I had more case law in my favor, I'd argue that simply distributing it to different funds also violates single subject. But I agree that that's probably too far. Not ask the board to do that as an admission. At the same time, though, I think that the land conservation fund here that's particularly problematic because it's not merely distributing tax, it's actually, you know, creating a new program, creating new mandates, and those mandates are disparate in different subject areas. Sort of saying here, you know, we're going to distribute the tax as we have in the past, and now we're going to create something new that she'll spend money on A, B, and C, and also on 1, 2, and 3.
Any other questions for Mr. Gessler? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Veach, would you like to respond? I don't know if there's questions for Ms. Veach. Don't think I have any. Okay. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the question of single subject for these measures? Then I'll close testimony on that issue. And I guess let's focus, maybe start focusing on number 68. Well, we can still have a general discussion about single subject, but I think once we get ready to start making motions and taking votes, I'd like to start with number 68. Discussion by the board. Mr. Domenico.
Well, I think, as I've stated, I sort of agree with both sides of this, and both sides have some reasonable arguments. But given that we're supposed to construe single subject fairly liberally, and given especially the recent decisions on actual severance tax cases, it seems to me that these are single subject. I mean, I'm not sure if someone came with a measure that simply did 108.7 and said that left the funding mechanism for the land conservation fund up to some the general fund or some other resource or the legislature. I don't think that would be two subjects. I think that the decision on the land trust was confusing and difficult to square with some of the other decisions. But I think that, you know, 108.7 is the only part of this that causes me any real difficulty, as I've expressed. But on the other hand, I do think, and I don't think it's necessarily related to increasing the severance tax, but it is not completely unrelated, and it's not the sort of thing that I think someone would be totally shocked by, that increasing taxes on oil and gas severance would then the increased money would be put into these sorts of things. So I'm going to vote that these all are a single subject. I don't think there's much difference in terms of single subject between the three in front of us.
Okay. Ms. Eubanks, do you have any comments?
I do. I think at least my recollection of number 14 may not be quite square with Mr. Gessler's, and we'll leave that as it may be. While I believe that a portion of the tax revenues that would have been generated under number 14 were to sort of help mitigate the impacts of oil and gas development, I don't believe that the school district capital construction, the state capital construction, or the education funding was specifically tied to somehow mitigating the impact of oil and gas development in certain communities. I think they were much broader purposes. And so for that reason, I don't see much difference between the three measures before us today in terms of how they're specifying how the revenues would be spent to what the court has already told us with number 14 as constituting a single subject. So I'm going to be voting in favor of finding a single subject on all three measures.
And I agree with the comments of Mr. Domenico and Ms. Eubanks. Let's go ahead. Unless the board objects, I guess I'd like to go ahead and take three separate votes then on single subject for 68, 69, and 71. And then if the votes are that the measures comply with a single subject, then we can go through them one by one and look at the staff drafts. Ms. Eubanks?
Then I would move that the board find that proposed initiative 2007-2008 number 68 constitutes a single subject and that we proceed to set a title.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
I would also move that the title board find that proposed initiative 2007-2008 number 69 constitute a single subject and that we proceed to set a title.
I'll second that motion. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
And then my last motion is that the title board find that proposed initiative 2007-2008 number 71 constitute a single subject and that we proceed to set a title.
And I'll second that motion. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. And that motion carries 3-0. So then let's turn to the staff draft on number 68. And Ms. Gomez will display the staff draft on the screen in the room. Ms. Veach, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments about the staff draft?
Yes, we have had a chance to look at it, and we think it's fair and accurate as to what the initiative is.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on the staff draft? Don't see any takers. Okay. Then I will turn to board discussion on the staff draft. Ms. Eubanks?
On number 68, I was wondering if it would be helpful on line 4 where it's referencing the elimination of the exemption for the stripper wells to actually say that it's an exemption from taxation. I don't know that most folks would know that the exemption is relating back to the tax. For example, to contrast it against what's dealt with, what the language specifies on line 5 for the elimination of the credit against the tax. It says it's a credit against the tax, and I just think it would be helpful to say an exemption from taxation for wells with minimal production.
And would it be, and that makes sense to me, would it make sense to say an exemption from the tax?
I'm fine with that.
Shall we put that on the screen, Ms. Gomez? So on line 4 after exemption, insert from the tax. So that clause would read, modifying the existing severance tax on oil and gas extracted in the state by limiting both an exemption from the tax for wells with minimal production and a credit against the tax based on property taxes paid, etc.
I would move that change.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? You know, if anybody present wants to comment on that, certainly we'll provide an opportunity if I don't see anyone. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of the beginning language describing the debrucing, I was wondering if we could just get rid of the beginning in 2009. I'm not sure that that language is really helpful. You've already got the date about when the modification of the tax is occurring. I don't think sort of past practice that we've been that specific on other measures that have been debrucing a revenue source, and so I would suggest striking the language that begins at the end of line 5 and on to line 6, beginning in 2009, comma.
And I would support that. I think if there were a delayed effective date, you know, there might be a reason to mention that, but I agree with Ms. Eubanks that we don't need that. Is that your motion?
I would so move.
I'll second
that. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
Also in regard to the phrase describing the debrucing, again, I don't know if the language that goes on about and not limiting other revenue that may be retained and spent is very helpful. Whether or not just the general statement about exempting revenues from the tax from state and local government spending limits would be sufficient to give the voters notice of that particular component of the measure.
I agree with that as well.
And so at the end of line 6, to start striking the language that begins with the and not, all the way up until the semicolon on line 7.
We do have copies. Let me just interrupt for a second. We do have copies of the estimates from the Office of State Planning and Budgeting on the measures. And I think Ms. Mikeworth is going to distribute them. Maybe if you have number 68 separate, well, it doesn't matter, but we're working on 68 right now. I'm sorry, Ms. Eubanks, did you make that motion?
I haven't yet, but I'd so move that change.
I'll second.
Right. I don't think we'd be striking the semicolon, though. We'd still want the semicolon, whether you move it or...
I'll second that. So then that phrase would just say exempting revenues from the tax from state and local spending limits, semicolon.
That's correct.
Okay. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
And this is just a question, and it is in regard to the phrase on line 7 about the creation of the Land Conservation Fund. I mean, there's other provisions in the measure, sort of, the GOCO board has responsibility for administering the fund and what the fund's supposed to be used for. And I don't know if those sorts of details at all, and not that we have to include all the details, but whether the creation of the fund itself is sufficient to describe, or whether we need to talk about providing for the administration and uses of the fund or something like that, I don't know. Just more of a question for my fellow board members.
Well, I struggle with that too, because I mean, and maybe it's just because of the nature of the way our discussion has gone. The creation of the Land Conservation Fund and kind of the substantive mandates of the fund do seem like a fairly important part of the measure to me, and the way that it's written now doesn't really give much hint about that it's very important. And I think part of that's the nature of these Tabor measures, that it's hard to really do what we normally do by putting some of the more important substantive provisions at the start. But I mean, I've sort of, part of why I was concerned about the single subject was I was trying to figure out how you could set a title that expressed not just the Tabor language, but the sort of semi-important substantive aspects of this Land Conservation Fund, and I don't know that I have a good answer, which is why I've been struggling with it, but I do think that it's insufficient just to sort of stick it in the middle there, and with no explanation that this fund has kind of specific substantive direction that's being created. I don't think, I mean, I think Ms. Eubanks also mentioned some of the sort of provisions for administering it. I'm not sure that those necessarily need to be in there, but some mention of what this land conservation fund that the people would be creating and funding would be doing is probably necessary, I think.
So perhaps...
Ms. Eubanks?
And I'm sorry for interrupting. Maybe we talk about creating the land conservation fund to be used for, I don't know, making grants for land conservation, or, I mean, that's somewhat repetitive in terms of the name of the fund, but, or we could even get into more details. I mean, perhaps Mr. Domenico, along those lines, would that help address your concern?
Yeah, I mean, I I think it's actually, you know, that there is something beyond simply the land conservation that's captured in the title. I mean, that could, to an average reader, suggest, you know, fixing up existing government land, when what this really is acquiring private land, right?
I believe so.
And so, creating the land conservation fund, and maybe saying something along the lines of creating the land conservation fund for the exclusive purpose of making grants for the acquisition of land or interests in land to preserve you know,
it's hard to
try to figure out if there's a way to summarize kind of the to preserve native habitat, river corridors, working farms. I mean, maybe you just stop there. Stop after saying something along the lines of to preserve or to acquire land, or just say to preserve interests in land or something like that. Might at least give people the idea that they're going to be buying up interests in land.
Is the statement in the legislative declaration accurate? I mean, could we use that? I'm trying to compare them, but could we say, for example, you know, creating the land conservation fund to promote the acquisition and preservation of land and water resources to protect wildlife habitat, maybe, and for other public purposes. Would that language work, or?
That's probably a pretty good direction to go.
And I'm seeing some nods, some affirmative nods, so shall we try that?
Creating the land conservation fund to promote the development of, to promote the acquisition and preservation of land and water resources to protect wildlife habitat and for other public purposes.
That would be accurate, you believe, and acceptable?
Yes.
Okay.
Would it be acceptable to be a little bit more specific about the funds used to award grants for that purpose?
That's fine.
Well, Ms. Eubanks, would you like to make a suggestion?
Okay. So after fund, to be used for awarding grants to promote the acquisition and preservation of land and water resources. Do we want to go further in terms of?
I would suggest going further.
Okay. And then to protect wildlife habitat and for other public purposes or purposes?
Mr. Gessler.
I'm in. I would just, looking at this, I think it's almost an all or nothing proposition. It's difficult to list a few details without all of them, but all of them becomes exceptionally cumbersome. So maybe I would propose simply to say to acquire land and interests in land for public purposes. But it just seems to me that if you say, you know, if it stops there, including land and water resources to protect wildlife habitats for other purposes, if you actually look at the language of 108.7, there's no reason to include protect wildlife habit and not include urban parks, for example, or working farms or river corridors, wildlife habitat, land or interests in land. So I think that that once you start down the road, you almost have to go all the way to the end to sort of bear as to what this actually does. Rather than emphasize. So I would, you know, perhaps stop at land or interest in land because it is general, without having the cumbersome language that would almost. Perhaps almost double the palette type. So just a comment on that.
Well, I'm wondering about, I mean, I think the point's well taken. I guess I'm wondering about just including the list from 108.7 in the place of for other public purposes.
And I guess I'm sort of hesitant to go that direction in terms of the detailed list. I mean, that we obviously could go that direction. I guess I was leaning toward maybe between the name of the fund, talking about land conservation, the fact that we may include language about promoting the acquisition and preservation of land and water resources, whether or not instead of going the direction you suggest in terms of very detailed, maybe you just say acquisition and preservation of land and water resources for public purposes. And
what if you just said for certain public purposes?
I'm fine with that. One of our favorite ways.
Yeah, some. I mean, I think adding some limitation on public purposes to some extent is helpful because
you're not going to be building buildings on
right,
a public
to the
building.
Extent that it suggests that it's not just any reason that the Land Conservation Fund comes up with that it calls a public purpose. I mean, I think Mr. Gessler's point is a good one, and I would suggest that I've got a couple other little suggestions too, but that we go in that direction and say to preservate. Well, that's one of my other changes. I mean, I guess what I would say is I would have it read, I think, or suggest at this point, creating the Land Conservation Fund to be used for awarding grants for the acquisition of interests in land and then I'm not sure what preposition I need here to for certain public purposes. Because the language in, I mean, so some of the changes I suggested was getting rid of to promote, because I don't think that's in there and I don't think it's necessary. Getting rid of water resources, because 108.7 actually just talks about land and interests in land that'll actually be acquired. And then we get into what we've just been talking about. So, yeah, I would suggest changing to promote to for, getting rid of and preservation, and probably change that to interests in land.
Grants.
I'd read for awarding grants for the acquisition of interests in land, because I think that includes acquiring land itself. Although I don't even need to know if you need it. You could just land, yeah, in. I guess that's what I'd suggest. I'm not sure interests in is necessary, but it may be to people who are concerned about subsurface rights and those sorts of things, which is a lot of people these days. And then I'd get rid of water resources. And then I think I would delete everything up to 4. And change other to certain is the best I can come up with at this point.
Mr. Robotham?
Hi, Doug Robotham with Colorado Conservation Trust. With respect to your thoughts on your deliberation there between land and interest in land and the solution you've come up with, interest in land, I think it's when we talk, whether it's in the law or even in the vernacular of land conservation, when we talk about acquiring land in fee simple interest, it's typically referred to as acquiring land. However, when we talk about acquiring something that's less than fee, we talk typically about acquiring interest in land. So I'm not sure that this necessarily fully characterizes the possibility that these funds could be used through the competitive grant process contemplated. These funds could be used for the acquisition of full fee title as well as less than fee interest in land, whether they're development rights or subdivision rights or other rights that are sure. Part of the bundle of rights.
That's fair enough. I was just trying to keep it short and sort of thought that the universe of interests included fee simple, but if you think it should be in there, it's fine with me to include it. To say acquisition of land or interest in land doesn't bother me at all. And if you think, certainly if you think some people would be misled by leaving it as is, I'm happy to change it. So after of, it would say land or now, the only problem with this is it doesn't really mention anything about the sort of purposes that are in either the legislative declaration or 108.7 itself. I don't think it's inaccurate. I don't know that it's, I think people who are concerned about what public purposes the Land Conservation Fund might be used for, it's not that complicated a measure that they won't be able to figure it out by looking at the blue book or the measure itself. And given what we've talked about before, I'm not sure there's an easy way to actually express without listing everything what those purposes are, or give some hint at least about the change to the legislative declaration or the substance of 108.7. So I just kind of throw that out there as a comment and see if anybody has thoughts.
Well, I think I can live with this, or but I'm a little concerned about losing I mean, at this point, I guess my preference is still to retain a little more of what this is for. And I guess I would retain, you know, the phrase for the preservation of land and water resources. It's sort of based on a premise, though, that I may not that may or may not be an accurate understanding, and that is that the phrase in the legislative declaration about preservation of land and water resources is based on 108.7's preservation of lands, including river corridors, which I'm assuming might relate to preserving water resources. Go ahead.
Having written this, characterization is correct.
Okay. Right, so I guess it's my preference to retain that in there somehow, but.
I mean, that's kind of what I was getting to. We've got in here now the sort of bare bones of the mechanics of what's going to happen, but the sort of substance of why and how they'll be guided in making these acquisitions of land, is left out, and that's where it would seem to me you could include that concept, because, I mean, my understanding, I'm not a water law expert, but my understanding is that an interest in land, is that an interest in water is not necessarily an interest in land, and what 108.7 does is allow the fund to purchase interest in land. It can do so with the purpose of preserving water resources, but it can't separately buy water rights, if I'm reading this correctly. And so while I agree that one of the goals is to preserve water resources, the way it'll do that is by acquiring land or interest in land. And I could be wrong about how the interaction of water law, but that I think is a similar concern to what I had, that this leaves out why you would be doing those things, including preservation of water resources.
Well, and I guess I'm wondering, sort of relating, Mr. Domenico, to your question, if the authority to acquire interest in land, and this may not be intended by proponents, but whether that's broad enough to include acquiring water rights for the preservation of water resources. Ms. Beach?
I'm going to address Mr. Domenico's point. I think he's correct in that 108.7 just allows for the purchase of land and not water rights, but by doing that and preventing development or turning into a golf course does preserve water resources, water quality, et cetera. So I think adding the language back in to protect wildlife habitat, or for the preservation of land and water resources to protect wildlife habitat is...
Well, maybe, yeah, I don't know, maybe what we do is go back to the legislative declaration, but take our attempt to work this concept in out of this clause that has to do with the Land Conservation Fund and put it somewhere separate, since where that language is in the legislative declaration, which isn't solely tied, although it points to essentially the Land Conservation Fund, it's not solely tied to that. And it also, those concepts also relate, I assume, to, you know, crediting 40% to the Clean Energy Fund and that sort of thing. So maybe that's how we can avoid creating a mess in that clause and create it somewhere else.
Mr. Gessler.
I would argue that it's sort of heading in towards the fundamentally misleading realm. And where I'm coming from in that is if you look at the actual way this initiative works, 25% goes to the state severance tax trust fund, 25% local government fund, 20% to the energy fund, 20% to the land fund, again to the local government severance fund. Essentially, we're talking about where 20% of the resources go. But by putting it in here, sort of in the front and the mid, right in the middle, and then at the end saying, oh, and there will be certain percentages to this other stuff, by the way. The emphasis of this ballot title almost becomes, well, is heavily weighted, misleadingly weighted, towards the Land Conservation Fund, when in fact only 20% of all the funds go to the Land Conservation Fund in this. So to the extent that you get into any description of the Land Conservation Fund, at minimum I would argue that it'd be at the end, and that you indicate to voters that only 1/5 of these severance tax increases is actually going to the Land Conservation Fund. Because the way I would read this right now, by seeing this sort of Land Conservation Fund here and these elaborate descriptors and detailed explanation of all this stuff that's going to happen, I would believe, and I think most people would also believe, that this is a very important part of this, and in fact the majority of what this initiative does, when in fact it's only a small fraction. And I don't think that that is solved by saying that certain percentages are credited to and then putting the other funds very end of this initiative. So I think this would create a misleading initiative, a misleading ballot title without explaining the relative emphasis of the weights of where these funding goes.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, I mean, on the one hand, we're required to set titles that are brief. And yet sometimes, of course, it is a challenge because lots of measures are somewhat complex. So I'm trying to figure out where's the appropriate balance here. I don't disagree with Mr. Gessler's statements, but my first reaction is a solution that would just be awfully complex, and I'm not comfortable with that. I mean, I guess I've been throwing out one idea, although I'm not very happy with it, and I'm not sure anybody else would be to leave this clause alone, just says creating the Land Conservation Fund, and tacking a few words into the end of the title, in lines what's now on the screen as 10 and 11, it might be just saying that specified percentages to be credited to the state severance tax trust fund, the local government severance tax fund, the clean energy fund for, and if this is accurate, and I'm quoting from the legislative declaration, for the development of renewable energy sources and energy conservation programs, and for the land conservation fund for the preservation of land and water resources. That sort of moves away from, I think, some of the things that we're trying to work into the title as far as the grants and some of the specific purposes. But again, I'm just not sure where to draw the line. But I do want to sort of at least make sure we say something about what these additional purposes are and what they're for. Ms. Eubanks?
I mean, part of the problem is the fact that three of the purposes for which the tax revenues are to be used is existing law. And, I mean, even if you start dealing with specifying what the Clean Energy Fund currently provides, you know, as its purposes, I mean, then do you have to get into, I don't want to get into saying what the state severance tax trust fund has to be used for, the local government severance tax trust fund, for a variety of reasons, mainly because it's very detailed. So to pick and choose, I'm somewhat uncomfortable in doing that. I do think there's a reason for giving more detail for the Land Conservation Fund and what it's to be used for, because it's being created by this measure, and it's set forth in this measure in terms of how it's supposed to be used. And so I sort of hate to go your direction. I'm concerned about going that direction. And whether or not, on the flip side, I hate to go in a way relying on solely the description in the legislative declaration, because I'm not sure to say wildlife habitat without indicating some of the other purposes, whether that's misleading, because it's sort of emphasizes one over other purposes, which at least based on the text of the measure itself, I think are all equal in emphasis. And so whether or not you could say something like, if we want to give more detail about the public purposes, maybe talk about for acquisition of land or interest in land, or purposes relating to the preservation of wildlife habitat, open space, and natural areas. I know it doesn't touch upon the whole laundry list, but maybe something like that would help get, and you could say other purposes if you want. But I'm just uncomfortable just saying wildlife habitat, because I'm not sure that, you know, whether it's the, you know, preservation of working farms and ranches, whether it's the river corridors, whether it's open space and parks, you know, how you pick and choose which ones are the most important to mention.
What if, this isn't the most elegant language, but what if you just said for certain conservation-related public purposes? I mean, I do think that's, I don't think it's a very pretty, I don't know how helpful it is. I think it gives a hint. I do think it captures everything that's actually in there. I don't really think it's a catchphrase or anything like that, but maybe Mr. Gessler disagrees.
Mr. Gessler.
May I put responding directly to that on hold just for a moment, and make possibly a suggestion? Opponent, I'm not going to lie and wait in the bushes and then come back and for everything, so I'll just put it out here now. I think a proper way to approach this would be to provide the voter some guidance on the percentages. That can be done with slightly more words, but with more clarity. And the way I would suggest to do that, say, if you look at line 6, exempting revenues from the tax from state and local government spending limits, and then I would say, and crediting 50% tax revenue to the state severance. Well, I'm sorry, my percentage. And crediting 25% to the state severance tax fund, 35%, I think my addition is correct, to local government severance tax fund, 20% to the energy fund, and 20% to the land conservation fund, comma, which, and then you can put your descriptor in the land conservation fund that you shall be created and devoted, dedicated to, which you'll created and and dedicated to awarding grants for the acquisition of land.
I was trying to figure out if there was a way to just include the fact that the conservation fund is being created. I mean, there's two things to Mr. Gessler's comments, I think. The first is including the percentages, which we can discuss. And the second is getting rid of this separate thing that's on 7 and 8 now and including it in what's the number 4 on 10 and 11 and somehow stating in there that the Land Conservation Fund, comma, which is being created
to award grants for the acquisition of land or interest in land for certain, whatever, now back to the same issues from before.
Or for a newly created land conservation fund, which
like that.
shall award grants for the acquisition of land. Assuming you stay with that line. And I guess the way I always look at editing stuff, if you repeat yourself, it's always an opportunity to consolidate ideas. And here we've got the land conservation fund, separate sections, and capture all the ideas around the land conservation fund, but and only refer to it once. And the other emphasis that I certainly have is that I think fairly and accurately describe what this ballot initiative does. You should probably have some weighting of the percentages. I understand that has to be balanced against brevity, but I do think that in this instance you gain clarity. And then, Mr. Domenico, I'm happy to respond to your earlier comments, although I forget at the moment what they are.
Well, let's deal with these for now, and then if I remember what they are, I do remember now, but it become irrelevant. So let's deal with these now. As I said, I was thinking along similar lines of trying to avoid the repetition and move the description of the Land Conservation Fund to the end. And I think the idea Mr. Gessler had of inserting in number 4 down there on line 10, the newly created Land Conservation Fund, comma, I don't even know if you need a comma. You just say the newly created Land Conservation Fund. It's probably better that way. Comma, which would award grants for the acquisition of land, and then go with what we've got. I think that's clearer, avoids potential confusion and overemphasis on the Land Conservation Fund. And accurately describes what's going on.
My concern with the newly created conservation fund doesn't tell voters that they're creating it by this initiative or that it was created by some other initiative recently. So I don't know that would be accurate if you said the newly created.
Yeah, is there a way to do that? I've been struggling with that.
Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of the concept of moving everything down to the last phrase, if you say the Land Conservation Fund, which is created to be used. I mean, whether that conveys the idea that it is...
Well, would there be anything wrong with just saying which... I mean, I guess the way these are phrased is kind of weird.
I mean, you can
which
say...
Which the measure creates.
I mean... which the measure creates to be used for, and then we're back to our other issue.
Right. I mean...
But I'm fine with
moving
it.
Does that work with the way these are structured? I think it does, but... Modifying... I think that works. The Land Conservation Fund, comma, which...
I don't think you'd even have a comma there. The Land Conservation Fund, which the measure... creates.
Well, then I would use that, I guess.
Or that.
Although that's a disputed point of grammar, whether which is incorrect without a comma in front of it. But for the pedants in the crowd, we can use that. But I like that the measure creates. And then
to be used for awarding grants.
Well, could we just change that to award?
Well, the fund doesn't award.
Well,
the GOCO board awards the grants. I mean,
that's true. That's true.
And that's why I'm a little uncomfortable
saying.
Yeah,
no, I agree. I like you're right about that. So then, I just paste that down there.
And then we're back.
All right. Well, and then my suggestion was that we didn't discuss was that after certain, we say conservation related, and I guess there'd be a hyphen in there, conservation related public purposes. And I just think that'd be okay.
I do think there'd be a hyphen between,
between conservation and related. I think we need a hyphen.
Then, I don't know, can we get rid of public? I don't.
Yeah, could we drop public?
It's just certain conservation related purposes.
Mr. Robotham?
Even though I'm in the conservation business, I've been for many, many years, sure that the words conservation related really are terribly descriptive. So I would encourage you to use more clearer language that really conveys the meaning. That's your intention.
Would preservation be more descriptive?
That would be better. I do think that going back at the risk of trying everyone's patience here, going back to the stated statement in the legislative declaration, it's descriptive, genders clarity. I think going into the language that is in 7, gender even further clarity. And conservation related really just it's almost shorthand and vernacular that I don't believe necessarily conveys the fullness of the idea.
All right. What if I have a suggestion that get rid of the conservation-related language, and instead of using the wildlife habitat language from Part 1, do something that I sort of got rid of before, and move it so it says something like the measure creates to be used for awarding grants for the acquisition of land or interest in land for the preservation of land and water resources, period.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Sure. Instead of all the, after 4 on the line 11, instead of certain conservation-related public purposes, which is really not very pretty, just say for preservation of land and water resources, period. That's language from the declaration that I think is a little bit more precise.
I would agree.
And I think captures the specifics that are in 108.7 itself without being specific. That's the best I can come up with.
Can we see that up, Ceci?
Yeah, so I'd go back to the 4 there on line 11. Add in for preservation of land and water resources. And then, obviously, if we do this, I'd delete the entire the language about creating the land conservation fund that's on line 7.
thought here, if I could.
Yes, sir.
I think this is definitely moving in the right direction. I think that was very helpful. If you look at the legislative declaration, we've captured some of it in the bit here. However, it goes on to read land and water resources to protect wildlife habitat and for other public purposes. If you then consider that language in light of the language in 108.7, where the description is made more elaborate, the intent here is to preserve native wildlife habitat, river corridors, working farms and ranches, urban parks and open lands, and open space and natural areas of statewide significance. The one unifying element in all of those is that they really do provide wildlife habitat. Each and every one of those descriptors provides wildlife habitat. Some of them address other reasons or rationales that one might be interested in protecting land. And as it relates to the drafting and the reason why the legislative declaration was written as such, we sought to pull out the common linkage between all of those, wildlife habitat, but then also to suggest that there were other public purposes that were doing that. Not in each and every instance, but in as a general statement, there are other public purposes being met. So to the extent that we want to capture the fullness of what is implied in 108.7, one way to do that would be to mention wildlife habitat.
Mr. Gessler?
I would just, in response to that, say, you know, the way 108.7 is written, it has a list of things that it does. And it says, I'm looking up 1, 2, 3, 4, fourth from the bottom of subparagraph 1. The 108.7, where it says, for land or interests in land, to the extent acquired with such funds to assist with stewardship of land or interest in land that will preserve native wildlife habitat, comma, river corridors, comma, farms or ranches, comma. So in other words, as written at least, issues such as river corridors, working farms or ranches, urban parks and open lands are not subsets of native wild habitat, but are separate categories, equal to them, rather than subcategories. And I would also, and I'm not going to fall on my sword on this a little bit. I think conservation is an okay word to use in this. This talks about nonprofit land conservation organizations. It's a fund. One of the proponents here is the Colorado Conservation Trust. So I think conservation is, from a linguistic standpoint, certainly an appropriate word to use.
Thank you. I mean, I tend to agree with Mr. Gessler. Although I think Mr. Robotham is correct that there may be a common element about wildlife in all of those, it nevertheless is a separately stated purpose. Sort of reluctant to focus on that, but I don't know how the other board members feel. Ms. Eubanks?
I'm in agreement that while I've recognized that the legislative declaration does specifically list it and then makes reference to other public purposes, the way I read the provision in 108.7, I mean, it's the whole laundry list, and I don't think it would be appropriate to specify wildlife habitat, although it may result from these other situations such as preserving working farms or ranches, but I believe that would be an improper emphasis on wildlife habitat.
I agree. I wouldn't have a problem with conservation instead of preservation, but I think we might as well use the language from the declaration itself. So I suggest we leave it as is, I think.
Let me go back to something that came up earlier. I guess I'm wondering about specifying the percentages. I'm interested in perhaps doing that. I think it would involve taking what we've got and saying, requiring that, 20% of the severance tax, 20% of the tax revenues be credited to the severance tax trust fund, and X amount to, and so forth, using the list that we have. Ms. Veach?
Yeah, my concern with that is, I think, Mr. Gessler's analysis, he's lumped together the allocation of 25% to the local government severance tax, and those are being distributed two different ways, one under the Curry Amendment and one not. So it may be misleading to say that we're giving it all to them, we're giving them 35%. Let me kind of help along. Under 108, 2B2, 25% of the revenues given to the local government severance tax fund, those are being distributed through the Curry Amendment. But under 5, 10%, which is also being given to the local government severance tax fund, are not being distributed through the local government does not have to distribute those to the Curry Amendment. So by just putting in 35%, that may be confusing.
I wouldn't have an objection to splitting it apart. I was just sort of following the way they
right, then
had
we have
four
to say,
categories there.
To the local severance tax fund, just to be distributed by the Curry Amendment, which voters don't understand, and 25% to be distributed to local government to be distributed otherwise, I think is not useful, is confusing, and makes this significantly longer by having to make that distinction.
Ms. Eubanks?
Well, I'm not sure that, the way it's currently drafted, it doesn't make that distinction. I think it's an accurate statement to say both, the 25% as well as the additional 10%, it's all going to the local government severance tax fund.
Yes. I didn't mean that would be an accurate thing, but all the local government tax severance fund have to allocation.
Right, although those two allocations are based on current law. Even the 10%, it's going to those communities that are socially and economically impacted under current law. But my inclination is I don't want to get into the specifics, and I don't think we've done that in the past.
Okay.
I don't think it's necessary to do so here. I think it's enough information to the voters to know that it specifies various percentages going to these various sources. Then, other than with the Land Conservation Fund, us specifying what it's to be used for, because that's a newly created fund, I don't know that we want to add to the details in that way, but that's just my initial inclination.
I don't know. I know we've done it this way in the past. But it does sort of seem to me that it's helpful information, and it doesn't really, I don't think it would add to the length at all, or much, if at all. I agree, we probably don't have to do it. On the other hand, I think it may be helpful, and I don't think that adding the percentage, if there's confusion caused by the fact that the local government fund is split, then adding a percentage doesn't change that confusion one way or the other. So
I would probably, I mean, I think it would be a helpful thing to say what percentage is what, and I don't think it makes it any more difficult to read. That said, I don't think we need to do it for it to be an accurate and thorough title, but I would do it if it were up to me, I think.
Well, I don't feel strongly about it, but I guess I'd just soon leave it like it is, I guess.
So do we need to vote on our change on 10 and 11 still? Have we voted on that?
Yeah, and I don't know if it makes any sense for me to offer. What we probably should do is make these motions, right? And then maybe just for formality's sake, I would move to make a change to add in the percentages, and just so it's on the record.
Okay, well, I think the change that we have not voted on, as I recall, was striking the language in what's now line 7 about creating the Land Conservation Fund, and then adding language in lines 10 and 11, as I recall. Is that correct? I'll go ahead and move those changes.
I'll second those.
If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All
those opposed,
no. That motion carries 3-0.
Well, I would just move that we add in to the list of the on lines 8 through 9, I guess, the list of places where the revenue is being credited, the percentage that each of those funds would receive.
And although I expressed an interest in doing that, I think I won't second that, but just because I'm just not sure that it helps that much. But Mr. Gessler?
Here's what I would argue, is that the two critical things that are important to people is the money they have to pay and where that money goes. I think most people would agree to that as a general matter. And this is fundamentally important as to where that money goes. Now, I was sort of playing around with hypotheticals, but if there were a hypothetical where 90% went to the state severance tax fund, 3 1/3% to the other three funds, it's a different situation here a little bit. But that's important information for people to know, I would argue. I'd argue just as importantly here, it's important for people to know that well over half of these increased taxes, well over 4/5 of it, go to already existing funds. They're already streams that are, you know, things that are funded by the tax now, and it's increasing that. And some people want to know that how much is going to this new program. And it does not add a lot, and it is a very large amount of information. I think it's very important for people to know. We can sort of wax eloquently about the governmental accountability, where does the money go, who's spending it, all of that stuff. But this is just something that's pretty fundamental. I mean, looking at this, it's just I would argue that this is very important information. And if you want to accurately convey what's going on here, not only do you have a specific number of how much additional revenue is being collected, but some sense of the magnitude of how it's being spent, I'd argue that's very important here, and it's very relevant information for the electorate. It's information they should know, and it does not increase the complexity or reduce the clarity in doing so. It's a relatively cost-free addition to this ballot title in that sense. Yeah, there's a lot of benefit to the average. And back when I was in college, we had there was a debate, and the title was "Tradition is No Excuse." And I would argue in the affirmative, at least in this case. I understand that the title board has not done this in the past, but I think here it's particularly important and valuable to do.
And you may be right. I guess I was thinking that if the percentages were more disproportionate, I I might be closer to agreeing. I mean, if it was 90% to the new funds and 10% to existing funds, in my mind that becomes a more significant feature of the measure. But I don't know. Like I say, I've kind of evenly divided my mind about it, but I think I'm still okay with the title the way it is. So that, I think that motion dies for a lack of a second, if it was a motion.
It was, I get it.
Thank you.
I don't think it matters.
One other thing that that I know we need to focus on is the blank in line one. Eubanks?
I'm concerned about and. In understanding, you know, all the confusion and understanding the differences between the measures, but I'm concerned about how the letter from OSPB on number 68 describes the measure and how it appears to say the same thing as what the OSPB letter for number 69, what it sets forth. And please correct me if I'm wrong in terms of my understanding of the measures, but I thought the difference between 68 and 69 is that 68 doesn't have the stripper well exemption or the ad valorem tax credit, whereas 69, all 69 does is eliminates the ad valorem, the tax credit for ad valorem taxes. And if you're, and I'm just looking at them very briefly, but it appears that 68 and 69 are described in the same way in terms of elimination of the ad valorem property tax credit. I'm not sure the letter for number 68 takes into account the stripper well exemption because it's using the same figure. And, I mean, assuming all other things remaining constant, it would seem like the elimination of the stripper well exemption would result in additional tax revenue. And so I'm a little uncomfortable using the number for that they've given us for number 68 because I'm not sure that it includes all the relevant features of 68 that should be considered in developing a fiscal analysis. And perhaps we could ask for further clarification. I know that would mean that we would need to lay this one over till our next meeting, but or we could go ahead and use this number and ask for that clarification with the understanding that we would bring it back at our next meeting, but I'm sort of uncomfortable using a number that doesn't appear to be correct.
I think the point's well taken. Of course, since we just got these, I had not looked at them, but it seems like that you do raise a good question. Mr. Robotham?
I just had a chance to look at these as well, and I noticed the issue that you have just raised, and I'm concerned about it. It doesn't appear that SPB's analysis has taken into account different effects of 68 and 69. I think that's meaningful and important, and so arguably the interests of the proponents are at least potentially better served with a lower number, but I don't believe that that has integrity. So I would suggest that however your process allows for it to include some additional analysis from OSPB on the point.
Well, and I'm happy to go back and ask for additional analysis from OSPB. And it would be probably my preference as far as the process is concerned is to lay this one over until our next meeting, which should be the first Wednesday in April. The downside for proponents is that that's an additional delay, but I think it's hard to set a title when we don't feel that we have the right information to fill in the blank. And I'm reluctant to set a title that we might depend on someone to file a motion for rehearing to correct what could be an erroneous number. So
I assume that the rest of the language would stay the same, and we would just be holding over the number to be inserted in the blank.
That's my intention, although I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, foreclose additional changes to the titles, but I guess my preference would be simply to lay it over, you know, as amended at this point, you know, for completion at the next regularly scheduled meeting.
And then the process would be that any rehearings and stuff would happen from there, even on the single subject question. Is that right?
I think that's correct.
Once the title's set, that would trigger the...
So in other words, assuming a title was then completed and set that first Wednesday in April, then a motion for rehearing could be filed. That would be heard at the third Wednesday in April.
We're fine with setting it over. For integrity purposes, I don't know what else we should do. Mm-hmm. With respect to 68, we can proceed with 69 and 71.
Okay. Well, then I'll go ahead and move that that as amended, we the board lay over number 68 to the next regularly scheduled meeting, with the understanding that I will seek clarification from the Office of State Planning and Budgeting on their fiscal estimates for each of these measures. So is there a second to that?
I second that.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. So number 68 will be laid over. So with respect to the other two, we have taken action on the single subject requirement. We could either work on the titles. Although I guess I'm wondering if it might be more efficient just to lay them over, but I don't have any preference about that. I think there's some things that we've done to the title to number 68 that might I haven't looked at this yet, that might we make kind of conforming amendments to the staff drafts for the other two. But any preference on the part of proponents, opponents, or board members? Ms. Veach?
Yeah, I think we'd like to proceed with 69. With the memorandum from State Planning and Budgeting with respect to the ad valorem tax addressed in 69. So I think
okay. Is there any objection with going forward with number 69? Mr. Gessler?
I probably don't have much of a problem going forward on this, although I guess I would just say that the staff draft with respect to the budgetary analysis is, I mean, the problems already we've seen may indicate that their analysis wasn't even in these other initiatives as well thought out as could be. So I would certainly have those comments for it as well. But as far as, you know, discussing the language here, and again, that's not a strong objection that I'm going to pound my fist on the table, but I would at least point.
Okay. Well, I guess I'd prefer to go ahead and move forward with 69, either in the course of the discussion or if we get additional information from OSPB that causes us to have concern about a number that we might fill in to the title of number 69, then I probably will end up depending on a motion for rehearing to correct that. So, Ms. Gomez has put on the screen the staff draft for the title to number 69, and I should probably mention for the tape that the time is 10:21 a.m. Does anybody want a break or okay.
Go through these fairly quickly.
Okay, well let's keep moving then. Ms. Eubanks.
Similar to what we discussed on number 68. On number 69, I think that we could remove the language on line 4 that says beginning in 2009, comma.
I'll move that we make that change.
I'll second that. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
One of the differences on 69 is the fact that although it eliminates the credit for the ad valorem taxes, it's exempting or debrucing all of the severance tax revenues from oil and gas from spending limits. And although I think the statement is correct as written, whether or not that concept that it's not just the revenues resulting from the elimination of the credit, but it's all revenues, whether it would be helpful to insert all before revenues at the beginning of line 5 to try to emphasize that this is a debrucing of all of the oil and gas severance tax revenues.
Could you accomplish the same thing by switching the position of the two clauses, the eliminating the credit clause and the exempting revenues clause? So the exempting revenues clause comes sort of immediately after discussion of the severance tax, basically implying that it's applies to the entire severance tax, and then talking about eliminating the credit.
I think that would be another way of emphasizing. But
yes.
I just don't know, you know, whether it would be lost on most folks one way or the other.
Well, no, I think I agree with you that the way it is now is confusing. I think, though, that a typical person who sat down and didn't know anything about this would read, if those two clauses were switched, it would say, all right, we've got a proposal to raise taxes by doing something to the severance tax. And what are we doing? We're exempting its revenues from the spending limits. And then we're creating a credit, or eliminating a credit. And I think that is an accurate description that doesn't risk the confusion that the current version has that you identified. You could do both, I think, add all in there, but I don't think it would be necessary if you switched them around.
I'd be fine with either approach.
I don't know that I have a preference. I guess I'm just trying to figure out, is, you know, normally that first clause after the in connection therewith would be the maybe the most important thing. So I'm just trying to weigh that against, you know, what's the, maybe that's not even a factor, but what's the most important thing? Is it the exemption from the spending limits, or is it the eliminating the credit? Does it matter, Ms. Eubanks?
Well, and obviously I think the proponents might be the best to say what's most important, but it seems to me that the emphasis of the measure seems to be spending the oil and gas severance tax revenues on the purposes that the measure set out. And to accomplish that, one important feature is debrucing that entire source of revenue so that the monies can be spent as they intend. The elimination of the credit obviously gives them more oil and gas severance tax revenues to use for their purposes, but perhaps the debrucing is a more important feature of enabling them to accomplish their purpose, which is funding the purposes, but maybe the proponents have a different perspective.
Eliminating the tax credit and then distributing the revenue. Could we keep it this way and put exempting all revenues? Does that make it clear?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
If I could just ask one question, but in terms of the use of the monies that are set forth in 108, it's all of the oil and gas severance tax revenues, not just the oil and gas tax revenues, severance tax revenues that result from the elimination of the ad valorem credit, correct? The way I read in your Section 3, modifying the 108, is that the revenues that you specify, 20%, 25% going to the state severance tax trust fund, et cetera, that's all of the oil and gas severance tax revenues being distributed in the manner that you specified, not just the additional tax revenues that would be generated from the elimination of the ad valorem tax credit?
That's correct.
Okay.
So, Ms. Eubanks, then maybe back to just inserting the word all in beginning of line 5.
I'll make that as a motion, and then you guys can
I'll go ahead and second
in.
That for further discussion. Then it would be in that clause exempting all revenues from the tax from state and local spending limits, et cetera.
Yes. And actually, I think once we get past this motion, then we'll be striking some of the language later in that sentence, that phrase.
Any further discussion? Mr. Gessler.
Grammarian in me. I'd argue that minor point, but it's exempting all revenues from the tax. I guess the antecedent from that is the severance tax, because the severance tax is singular as well, but property taxes. Clarity by saying exempting all revenue from the severance tax.
Well, but
so
then
we know exactly what tax we're talking about.
Well, but then I think you got to say oil and gas, because you've got severance tax on other coal and so then
I stand corrected.
I mean,
you're right. I agree with you there, but I think you probably do need some modifier for that tax on 5, because there's a lot of taxes flying around here.
Well, and it may be unique because you've got the reference to the property taxes, which is what the
Do
credit
is based
on.
Do we have that reference to the property taxes? Do we just get rid of that is based on property taxes paid?
I think it's an important descriptor for the particular credit that's being eliminated, which is based on the ad valorem taxes paid, which is a credit against the oil and gas severance tax.
Right. I'm just not sure I see why it's that important. I mean,
to my knowledge, Colorado is perhaps it's one of the only, but I think it's the only state that provides this credit against severance tax liability. But, I'm sorry, a credit against property taxes. To me, it's a very, it's not just any credit. Really, it's tied to property tax.
Is there some other credit in these statutes that isn't being eliminated? I mean, I don't think I have the votes for this anyway. I just think it's confusing and doesn't add much to the average voter.
Well, the average voter pays property taxes.
Right.
I would suggest. And I think it's important that people understand that the average oil and gas company can take a credit against their property taxes.
Right. Well, it's the opposite, right? They can take a credit against their severance taxes because they also pay property taxes. So, I mean, I don't know. If anything, I would think my position would be more helpful to you, but politically.
Well,
but it's fine. I just think it's, I don't think it adds much to your typical voter. And it avoids the confusion.
As a taxpayer, I can't credit against my ordinary income tax based on my property tax.
Right, but I mean, as I say, I'm not sure this is relevant. I mean, as an ordinary, a corporation can't take it on their income tax either. They pay an extra tax on top of both property taxes and income taxes. So I don't think it, as I say, I think it doesn't add much, the fact what this credit is based on. And it does add confusion just by injecting into the title another type of taxes. I mean, we've already got a severance tax, a credit, and an exemption from revenues, and now we've got property taxes. So I just think it's kind of confusing. But if everybody wants to leave it in there, that's fine with me. I just think it adds confusion without adding much relevant information.
Ms. Eubanks?
And I guess just from my experience of dealing with severance tax issues over at the legislature, that the ad valorem tax credit is a major issue, and so I think it's important to give the notice of the credit that's being eliminated by the measure, and that just happens to...
Well, I'm sure it's a major issue, but I'm not sure that in the title, I mean, it would seem to me it'd be a major issue no matter what the credit is based on. If you're getting rid of any kind of credit, it would be a major issue, and so that's all my point is. I certainly think that something needs to be in there that you're eliminating a credit that these companies get. I'm just not sure you need to say what it's based on. I mean, if it were based on, you know, how many employees they had, it would be just as important, it seems to me, in terms of eliminating it. But
and we might include those sort of details if we had that type of measure before us, just in terms of rather than just saying eliminating a credit. Shall we deal with the motion before us, and then perhaps we can deal with Mr. Gessler's concern about the reference to tax on line 5?
Well, I was thinking it might affect...
Okay.
I mean, I guess I was wondering, instead of saying all, and that's the motion at this point, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I don't know, I may be confusing different issues, but instead of saying all, I mean, exempting revenues from the severance tax on oil and gas from state and local government spending limits, or turn that around, because there's a couple of froms there that bother me, but I'm not so enamored with the word all if we end up specifying that we're talking about the severance tax on oil and gas.
Well, would you like me to withdraw my motion?
Would you like to?
I'm fine with doing that.
Okay.
Like I said before, I don't know that the statement as included in the staff draft was inaccurate. I mean, because revenues from the tax are being exempted. It's just the fact that, you know, it's not tied to the revenues generated by the elimination of the credit. And so in terms of saying, if we want to say exempting revenues from the severance tax on oil and gas from state and local government spending limits, I'm fine with that too, if we think that gives that emphasis that it's the revenues, which...
Well, and as I sort of think that through, I guess the other phrasing that I wanted to compare all of this with would be, again, kind of turning that clause around because of the two froms that I think are a little confusing. And if instead we said that specifying or providing that state and local government spending limits do not apply to revenue from the severance tax on oil and gas. It's, to me, that kind of reads better. I don't know whether it fully answers the question that Ms. Eubanks is trying to deal with, is to make it clear that it's really all of the revenues, not just the revenues from eliminating the credit.
Would it help at all to say exempting from state and local government spending limits revenues from the oil and the severance tax on oil and gas? I mean, in terms of the separation of the two froms?
I like that. So.
Okay. So why don't we strike revenues from the tax on line 5 and then after the word limits on line 5 insert.
You want to go ahead and just strike? Well, it's up to you.
Okay, we can and strike the language and not limiting other revenue that may be retained and spent. And substituting in its place. And then inserting after the stricken language. Revenues from the severance tax on oil and gas.
And I, having seen that, I like that better, but I'd be happy to have that word all in there nevertheless.
Yeah, I think it should be in there. I mean, that solves part of the problem of the confusion about which tax you're talking about, but the original issue Ms. Eubanks raised was not that, but it was confusion about whether you're just talking about the credit or the revenue from the credit elimination or all the revenue in it. So I think it should be in there. Okay. I'm not sure if I think we need on oil and gas to be repeated everywhere. I think we've already said this is this concerns the severance tax on oil and gas, not other severance taxes. But
and I'm fine with that too. If you want to drop on oil and gas,
yeah,
it's true. Your earlier reference is severance tax on oil and gas.
Although, you know, now to contradict myself. We are going to include all, and that's the only place where we eliminate the use of oil and gas. I guess there's some potential that that would cause confusion, so maybe we should just leave it.
Well, you still have the reference on line 7 of just tax revenues without getting into the specifics. So I don't know that this would be the only place on line 6 where we didn't have the reference to oil and gas.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just that there is still severance tax revenues from imposed on other minerals and coal and such things that it isn't the subject of this measure, and just to distinguish, but
yeah.
Most people don't know that either.
I would probably leave it as is, I think, now that I think about it.
So I would move these changes.
Okay. And Ms. Eubanks moves, and I'll second those changes so that that clause would read, exempting from state and local government spending limits all revenues from the severance tax on oil and gas, semicolon. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
I think the next change we would have is there on lines, starting on line 6 onto line 7, striking the language creating the land conservation fund, semicolon, consistent with our earlier discussion. And do you want me to go ahead and then on line 9, after the word fund, we would insert that the measure creates to be used for awarding grants for the acquisition of land or interest in land for preservation of land and water resources. move that those changes.
I'll second that. Discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Do we want to insert an amount in line 1? Which, based on the OSPB estimate, I believe would be $213.3 million. And again, unless further information from OSPB in connection with the fiscal estimate on number 68 would change this, I guess I'll just go ahead and move that we strike the blank and substitute, and not in words, but in numerals, I guess, $213.3 million. Yes, with I think a lowercase m. Don't remember for sure about previous matters of form, but I don't think we wrote those out. But
no, I don't think so.
So that would read state taxes shall be increased $213.3 million annually, et cetera.
Did you move that?
I move that.
I second it.
That's been seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
And so I would move for the adoption of the title as amended by the title board, or number 69.
I'll second that. And I should state for the record that the changes that we have made to the staff draft in what is now lines 1 through 11 would also be made in the ballot title and submission clause that begins with what is now line 12. I would like to ask proponents one thing that, we have several similar measures. I haven't thought this through, but to the extent that the titles that we end up setting could be very similar, perhaps confusingly or misleadingly similar, it's a custom to ask if the proponents intend to circulate more than one version. And the concern, again, is that we not have different titles in circulation that might be confusing. I'm not sure that comes up here because there's enough difference, but I guess I at least would wonder if the proponents would want to comment on that.
To change, of course, that's not our intention. It's just to circulate one.
Okay. I mean, this is the first one that we've set, and again, it may not come up if we set other titles that are different. There may not be an issue anyway. But thank you. Is there any further discussion on the motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
I'll just reiterate my belief that it would be a better title if it included specific percentages.
Okay.
I won't bother with a motion this time.
For the record, I think I'll go ahead and read the title then as amended into the record. The title would read then, state taxes shall be increased by $213.3 million annually by an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the severance tax on oil and gas extracted in the state, in connection therewith, for taxable years commencing on or after January 1, 2009, eliminating a credit against severance tax on oil and gas that is based on property taxes paid, exempting from state and local government spending limits all revenues from the severance tax on oil and gas semicolon, and requiring, I can't tell whether that is a semicolon, but okay, and requiring specified percentages of the tax revenues to be credited to PRIN 1, the state severance tax trust fund, comma, PRIN 2, the local government severance tax fund, comma, PRIN 3, the clean energy fund, comma, and PRIN 4, the land conservation fund that the measure creates to be used for awarding grants for the acquisition of land or interests in land for preservation of land and water resources, period. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 69. The time is 10:48 a.m. So then let's turn to number 71. Ms. Gomez has displayed on the screen the staff draft for number 71. Ms. Eubanks?
My first issue is on an issue that's unique to this measure in terms of how it's drafted and what's included in the staff draft, and specifically it's the language on line 5, which states that this additional severance tax on oil and gas is not subject to any exemptions or credits. And although that's true, it's not really based on any language of the measure. It's true based on the fact that the language for the additional tax the reference for the ad valorem tax existing in statute wouldn't refer to 105(1C). It doesn't specifically include a stripper well exemption, similar to how the current severance tax on oil and gas is drafted in 1B. So I don't know if it's really appropriate to say that it's not subject to any exemptions or credits, because that's not a specific affirmative statement that's in the measure. It's sort of by operation of the way the measure's been drafted. But, I mean, to me it's just imposes an additional severance tax on oil and gas. So whether or not we should just remove that reference.
Trying to refresh my memory about this. It sounds right to me. Ms. Beach, do you have any concerns about removing that language in line 5 about which tax is not subject to any exemptions or credits?
No, I think Ms. Eubanks is correct.
Okay.
Okay. So then I would move that we strike the language beginning on the comma after income on line 5 up until the semicolon.
I'll second that. Is there any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
I would move striking the language there on line 5 that goes on to line 6 beginning in 2009, comma.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
On line 7, I would move striking the language and not limiting other revenue that may be retained and spent.
I'll second that.
No, we actually still need the semicolon, or to at least move it behind limits.
I think that was moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
Then, again, there on line 7 onto line 8, striking the language, creating the Land Conservation Fund, semicolon.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
And, of course, adding the language in regard to the Land Conservation Fund is complicated somewhat by the placement of the Land Conservation Fund. And so I don't know whether the board has a preference to reorder that so that that language is at the end, or you want to just add that additional language as it appears, where the fund language appears now. You have a strong preference one way or the other?
I suggest reordering it.
Okay.
Maybe moving paren 2 to the end.
Okay. Then I would move that we strike the language beginning after the paren 2. So it starts, strike the language, the Land Conservation Fund, semicolon, and paren 3. Strike paren 3. Or try to strike paren 3. There you go.
Oop. Okay.
And then on line 10, after the word fund, insert comma and paren 3. The Land Conservation Fund, that the measure creates, to be used for awarding grants for the acquisition of land or interests in land or preservation of land and water resources. That would be my motion.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Going back to the blank on line 1, it looks like the OSPB estimate says that the gross amount of tax revenue generated by the new tax will be $299.1 million. Ms. Eubanks?
Again, I'm a little concerned. If you look at the last paragraph on page 2 where it gives you that figure, it talks about sort of the basis for their projection, and it says incorporating estimates of gross production value, exemptions for small wells, and deductions. And I don't know if that means that they assume deductions for small wells applies to this additional tax, which it's my understanding does not. There's no stripper well exemption, so I don't know. Or maybe they used what's currently exempt from the tax in figuring out what that figure would be applied to those wells. I don't know.
I guess I'm not sure how that small well exemption applies, but would the change here ever affect small wells, given that, I mean, this only applies to $300,000 and over, right? And so are they two separate issues? I mean, I sort of understand what you're saying, but maybe it's...
I I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of the oil and gas industry very well. I know that this additional tax does not include the exemption of stripper wells as currently exists for the existing severance tax on oil and gas, whether because of the way the additional tax is structured and whether there'd ever be and I don't know, it may be complicated by the fact that it's the gross income of taxpayers of $300,000. It's not necessarily the income generated from a particular well, and so a producer taxpayer may have $300,000 or more of gross income, even though some of that income's from stripper wells and some are from wells that either they have a lot of stripper wells or they have a mix that's generating, I assume, that at least that gross income level. But I just don't know. And so I don't know whether I should be concerned about the estimate or not without further clarification.
Well, I understand that, and it looks to me, comparing some of their other ones, that that's just sort of
their canned
boilerplate
language
that they include in there, right? So I'm not all that concerned. I mean, because I guess the way this would work is those exemptions do still apply, and so to some of the tax being raised by the severance tax. And so when they're doing an analysis of the increase in the tax, they still have to look at what the existing exemptions would apply to. I don't know. I certainly agree it could be clearer how that works, but it would seem to me that in doing an analysis, even though that specific additional tax doesn't include those exemptions, they still have to consider them.
And I agree that that seems to be what they would need to do, because if you just figured the this proposed additional tax on what's currently taxed, taking into account the income requirements, that then they'd also be theoretically taking into account how much income may be generated from stripper wells that may not be subject to the original tax but would be subject.
Right.
Shall we go ahead and use this figure? And
my guess is this is as good a figure as they'll be able to come up with, and okay, they might be able to clarify it. But
I think that'd be my preference, to go ahead and use it. When I ask OSBB for clarification on 68, if that changes, then hopefully we can address it. I hope we can, I guess I'll go ahead and move as Ms. Gomez has shown on the screen, striking the blank and inserting $291.1 million.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further? Ms. Eubanks.
No, I was just going to move that we adopt the title language as has been amended for proposed initiative number 71.
And I'll second that. Again, the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause. Just to read this into the record, I'll go ahead and read the title then as amended. The title would read, state taxes shall be increased by $291.1 million annually by an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the severance tax on oil and gas extracted in the state, in connection therewith, for taxable years commencing on or after January 1, 2009, imposing an additional severance tax on oil and gas for taxpayers with $300,000 or more of gross income, exempting revenues from the additional tax from state and local government spending limits, and requiring specified percentages of the revenues from the additional tax to be credited to, the Clean Energy Fund, comma, paren 2, the Local Government Severance Tax Fund, comma, and paren 3, the Land Conservation Fund that the measure creates to be used for awarding grants for the acquisition of land or interests in land for preservation of land and water resources, period. There's no other discussion. All those in favor say aye.
I'll just repeat for the record my previous belief that the title could be more helpful and more thorough if we included specific percentages.
Thank you. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 71. The time is 11:03 a.m. That concludes our agenda for this morning. We'll be in recess until 1:30 this afternoon. Thank you.